Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 153 with the title, Fearless Connections, Bold Journeys. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Anna Van Atmel. Anna is the founder of Wandering Roots, hosting transformative adventure retreats worldwide and empowering women to design lives filled with authenticity, connection, and purpose. When I asked Anna to describe her superpower, she said that it is embracing risks to inspire fearless living and authentic connections. Hello, Anna. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So whereabouts in the world are you? Did you say Michigan?
Yes, I'm in Michigan in the U.S. It's very cold here.
Yeah, I was talking to someone from Atlanta the other day, and they said it was almost snowing in Atlanta at this time of year.
Yeah,
unheard of.
It's kind of been a weird year for everybody, even where it's not supposed to be cold. So,
yeah, weird. Yeah, it's very wet, and a lot of storms over here. So, yeah, the UK is not a happy place either.
No, but you know, everybody. I've actually hosted a few retreats in the UK, Scotland, and then also Ireland, and we're going to Iceland too this year. But I'm like, it's just weather. We're so used to it. It makes all of us pretty resilient. So I'm happy to dwell here.
The saying goes, it's not the wrong weather. It's just the wrong clothing.
Yes. No, I always say that. I always say there's no bad weather, just bad gear.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you can be wrapped up and snugly in a huge coat and you can be minus 10 outside. Yeah. So, Anna, what inspired you to leave? Yeah, you had a successful career. What inspired you to leave that and pursue this life of adventure where you create spaces for women?
Yeah, for the most part, it was a long journey. It was a couple of years. I will give you the highlights, the cliff notes, if you will. But I got the opportunity in my old career in laboratory medicine to start build a lab. I was the first employee and there were the owners and that was it. I built the lab, bought the equipment, hired the staff, and it sort of planted the seed of being an entrepreneur with no financial risk, which is usually a hang up for most of us. And it just made me think a little differently. But also I had to have neck surgery around the same time. So I was in a neck brace for 4 months and I couldn't do anything. Couldn't drive, had to take a pause on work. It was the first time I probably paused ever in my life. I was 28. And I had so much time to sit with my thoughts and I was wildly unhappy. I had realized that I had achieved more financial and sort of career, like climbing the ladder success than I ever thought possible. But I still wasn't jazzed about it. And I just wanted, I had this very wake up moment of, I get one life. I just felt my mortality for the first time. You know, in your 20s, you think you're gonna, like, that's just something that happens to old people. And I was like, I don't want to screw this up. I want to squeeze every drop out of it. I want to be jazzed about it. And this is not it. And that's pretty terrifying. And there was a lot of shame around that of not being more grateful for what I had. And I had attained a lifestyle that I really enjoyed and didn't really want to start over and let go of. So, yeah, I took yoga teacher training to sort of help heal my chronic neck pain and not become a pain management patient. And I took yoga teacher training and I had been traveling quite a bit. And I thought, I had this experience and training that I was with 11 strangers, 11 women that were supporting each other. And we were sharing very vulnerable parts of ourselves, and everybody was loving and accepting each other for who they were and not who they were trying to be. And I thought I could create that type of environment and combine up my love of travel and host a retreat. And I tried one in 2018, like in northern Michigan, a few hours away from where I live. And I did a long weekend, and then I did another one, and then I did another one, and then I started hosting international for 7 days, and it just kind of took off from there.
Wow, I'm loving it. Your kind of story there really resonates. You know, you get to that point in your life where you think, I can just carry on as I am, walk into the distance with no control over my life, just doing what everyone expects on this conveyor belt. Off we go. Sometimes you just have to hit the stop button, don't you? And just say, hang on a minute, I want to get off for a minute and figure out what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I had like right around the, I also at the same time of having that epiphany of like, you only get one chance, you only get one life. I was like, I have created all of this. And so if I'm passionate about my work, I'm sure I could have even more success. And also like, I never once thought about what I wanted. I was literally just being a practical human being, getting good grades, going to college, getting a job in healthcare because there would be, you know, job security for the rest of my life. I never, ever thought about like what I was passionate about or what inspired me or interested me.
I guess you must have been surrounded by people who were inspired, but also cautious about what you were doing, sort of not say holding you back, but going, are you sure about this?
Yeah, it was very, very practical. A lot of just practical human beings, which I kind of consider to be a little bit asleep, just kind of comfortable and not really like living. And right around the time I went to yoga teacher training, I sort of just tripped into this network of entrepreneurs at the same time. It was like those worlds of me sort of waking up and then being surrounded by other people that were thinking differently than the other people that I'd been spending time with, or even how I felt like I had been thinking. So that was definitely the culmination. You know, they always say you're the, the five people you spend the most time with are usually a reflection of who you are as well. So
yes, that's very true. I was looking through the show notes you sent through a bit earlier, and your kind of mantra around it, the fear of doing things holds you back, but it's how you break through that fear. And not say being risk adverse, but being risk managed and knowing that the fear is just, it's just fake.
It is. People do assume I'm fearless, and I'm not. Everybody has some fear. It's a fear, but I have a bigger fear of getting to the end and having regrets that I didn't try something than taking a risk. And my husband is very risk averse, and I'm just not. I side hustled the business, Wandering Roots, for 2 years before I jumped in full time, tried to build an audience from scratch and knew that was going to take a while, shoved money away into a savings account to try to make that leap a little, I guess, risk managed. And yeah, there are multiple ways to skin a cat, and that's what works for me.
I guess that's the root of being an entrepreneur, though, isn't it? It's risk management and just going for it.
All the time. I mean, how many times do you try something new as an entrepreneur? You're trying to figure out, you're wearing all these hats, you're trying to figure out all these things, and
yeah. Don't you know what a molecular diagnostic is? You know, it sounds kind of really kind of big brain stuff.
Yeah. We used to, like, if you go to the doctor and you have your blood drawn, there's routine labs that just get that ran at a general hospital. And then anything specialized that gets sent out, that's what molecular diagnostics is. It's cancer screening, prenatal diagnostics is a really big one. And that's what the last 7 years I spent time in. There's things for anything, though. Just better testing, better diagnostics. I am a person that gets bored easily. I like to be challenged. And it fed my soul in that capacity for quite a while. And then having to start from scratch and manage people also was a challenge that I wasn't familiar with. So I'm grateful for it. I always say that, you know, being an entrepreneur, the more like experience you have in a previous life is just going to serve you in this capacity, because there are so many. I was really, really into data and publishing journal articles and things, and that really helps me serve my clients today when I plan their retreats, because I am a numbers nerd. I love spreadsheets. Nobody that has ever hosted a retreat, myself included, is doing it for the profit, but it's the only way to sustain your business instead of operating an expensive hobby. To be able to share the work and the content you're passionate about and be able to energetically be able to do another one is really, really helpful. And a lot of people get bogged down by it. And that's just a thing that I had been fine tuning as a executive for a long time, 13 years. So it's kind of second nature.
What you're saying there, profit isn't a dirty word. And if you want to create a sustainable business with legs that is there to serve the needs of the people you help, you have to earn money. You have to pay the mortgage and the rent and put food on the table.
Yeah, you got to make enough money to pay for your venue and your support staff and then pay yourself. So you're part of the team.
Yeah, we're not all Bill Gates philanthropists with billions that we can just expend for the fun of it.
Exactly.
What you're saying resonates completely, because I spent most of my life in IT computing.
Amazing.
So I left school. Well, actually, I was an electronics engineer when I left school and then moved over to IT and then spent 25 years in IT, mainly small business, looking after small companies, eventual networks and servers and phone systems, that kind of stuff. And then I got... I found my get off the conveyor belt moment about 10 years ago and jacked it all in and created a new career out of nothing. And that was quite risky. And there's no certainty in that, is there?
No, there's no certainty. I do think there's a lot of excitement in it, though, if you don't get bogged down by all the fear. It's like not a lot of people go after their dreams and just go for it. And it's the highest highs and the lowest lows. It's a mixed bag, but if you get too caught up into the lows, you never get to enjoy the highs. It was hard, and it still is, but I wouldn't change it.
Yeah. I also look back at my call it a career, if you want, or life in the past, that you do pick up a lot of these life skills. So I was very familiar with consulting, engaging with customers, solution selling, sales, marketing, business development, because it was my business, the IT company. You kind of get used to all of this stuff, organizing your own travel. So when you start another business, you've got all of these skills ready at hand, haven't you?
Yeah, totally. I'm even thinking IT for podcasting, like all the equipment and things is probably so much easier for someone like you.
Yeah, I mean, COVID was certainly easier.
Yeah.
Because one of my hobbies was photography and videography and editing videos and things like this. And suddenly we need cameras. Suddenly we need lighting, which are all the key elements to photography and videography is lighting and good cameras and sound.
You were like, I've been training for a long time for this, guys. I got you.
And in the first couple of months of COVID, I was providing a kind of an ad hoc service to people who were trying to get online and get going and restart their businesses. So I was doing some training for people on how to set their cameras up, how to get their on-screen presence looking good. And so that gave me a bit of a purpose for 2 or 3 months until the market suddenly picked up again and I could start doing other stuff. It gave me a purpose when otherwise I'd be sat in bed going, doom is woe is me. So bringing all that expertise into the fore, it's just another entrepreneurial trait, isn't it? Saying, well, I can see a gap here. There's a bit of a market. I wasn't making a fortune. I was helping people.
Yeah. I think that's the entrepreneur mind, right? Is always filling a need. Like you were solving a problem, was giving you purpose. And I think that there's a collision between like what lights you up and also solving a problem for the client. So
you now enjoy not only the organization and the logistics of getting people onto the retreat, you get the bonus of going on the retreat and enjoying what you're creating as well.
Yeah, I first just started just hosting retreats, and a lot of other entrepreneurs asked me, like in the early years, would you ever plan it for other people? I said, no, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm still figuring out. And then COVID happened and I quit my lab job in October of 2019, only to have to cancel the majority of my events and my retreats for 2020. And I thought it was going to be the first year, you know, both feet in, all this excitement, and it really didn't work out that way. But I was like, okay, I don't want to go back. This is a test from the universe, and I'm like firm in that I don't want to do that anymore. And so I will take this time and create a service for the people that were requesting it, sort of giving me a purpose, like you said, and feeling a need, and created a digital course at the same time, because what else do you do except record things at your house, you know, to put something out there. So I actually, in the last year and this year too, is where I spend most of my time, is helping other entrepreneurs plan and host their own. And then I still host 2 to 3 international ones of my own a year. But I used to do 6 a year, so that's scaled back significantly.
So in a way, helping others organize their events is less risky than having to finance your own events,
that's,
I guess.
That's less risky. You are absolutely correct, because I'm not putting out the capital they are. It's my favorite. It's like being able to share all of the mistakes I made and hold their hand and tell them it's all going to work out great. And people are so, so passionate about sharing whatever they want to share, that it feels like it wouldn't have happened without us working together. It feels like we got to bring it to the world together. And hearing their story is just so much fun. It's like we really get to know each other, and it's just a lot of women supporting women and business owners supporting business owners. And it's a lot of flexibility because I don't have to be there. I can work on it when I have time.
I've never done a retreat. I've got a reason or excuse or why. I just never have. Never been in the right time, the right place. I've seen them advertised. I've seen people talking about them, and we'll go off to Bali for a week or fortnight or 2 weeks, whatever it may be. And I think, oh yeah. So what does a typical retreat look and feel like?
So good question. First of all, there are thousands of them and they're all very different. And I've helped them, so many different types of humans plan theirs, like food photography, actors, there's people in the wellness sphere of like Reiki, massage therapy, Thai massage, a woman that runs a nonprofit just for Asian women. There's just so many ways you can do it. But mine, I want everybody to try something that kind of terrifies them. I want them to like step outside of their comfort zone with a supportive group of people around them, and also have that pause like I did, where all of your responsibilities is taken care of, because we have a personal chef, we have somebody there that's taking photos so you can disconnect from your phone all week. And then you literally, I always say the itinerary is just the suggestion. Pick and choose the things in the present moment of what you actually want to participate in, and tune into what you actually want day to day, but also what you want out of life, and see if we can maybe take something from that experience and incorporate it into your daily life.
Yeah, I love that. I heard someone describe another organization I was doing some work with as, I use the F word, fucking up with friends is what they described it as. So you go out to these places.
F word, my favorite word, fucking around with friends and stealing it.
Yeah. So you just know you've got a supportive environment. There's no silly questions. There's no silly mistakes. Yeah. Everyone's there to big you up, which is the opposite of social media, because everyone on social media wants to put you down. This is bringing you up. And
ours is turning into a little bit of like a adult summer camp almost, where people meet, become friends, and then they like get together to like book the same one for the following year so they can reunite. And when you're in summer camp, you're always like, what week are you coming back next year? And you try to line it up with your besties. But yeah, it's so much fun. It's really, really rewarding to be able to see these people every single year, and sometimes more than once a year. And watching strangers become friends is fun too. It's really...
That's beautiful. Yeah. So I can imagine you there. The coach arrives from the airport. There you are with your clipboard ticking people off. Shelly number one, Shelly number two.
I'm the only one that knows what room they're in, because I do all the logistics, but there's always just a chaotic mess of bags and hugs and things. And then we usually have our first meal together and do intros. We go around the table and everybody does a quick intro. And then I make everybody go around the table and say 3 things they love about themselves, because I think we can get bogged down with the the roles and responsibilities and all the hats we wear. And you kind of get the essence of who they are as a being when they just say the three things they love about themselves. So it's nice.
Yeah, I wonder if they come multiple years, whether they say the same three things. That'd be interesting to track.
Yeah, that, you know, you can sometimes see people get a little more confident and say like bigger things, you know, because sometimes it's hard for people to find three things, which is kind of hard and sad. But there are some people that have no problem with three and they could do another three the following year, or they could do six right away, you know, so.
My mind was just wandering there thinking, what have you done this year? Kicked my husband out, got a new life, and living my best life now. So, and that's all the empowerment you've given people.
Yeah, yeah. One lady quit her job before she went home. 1 year, Costa Rica.
I guess that's what you're trying to give people, that empowerment.
I wake people up. Some people wake up more than others. Some people really just need the space to just reset, you know.
You get hung up on the grind, don't you? You're doing the same thing day in, day out, and so familiar with what you're doing, and everything else just rushes by. Yeah,
yeah.
So you step out of it.
I think that you can do any of this type of work at home. You can. I just think it's easier to go away sometimes to not have any distractions. We have multiple women that say they've never felt that taken care of. So sometimes just that reminder that you are worthy of being taken care of is really beautiful. I personally work from home, and it takes a lot for your time management. I don't know if you feel the same way, but like you can get distracted by the dogs or the laundry or just anything stupid, and then kind of get into your cycle of routines and forget to pause anyways, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's my procrastinating brain. If something's shiny or a squirrel or something, I sort of wanders by. So, oh, look.
It's funny today.
Oh, shoot, I was supposed to do this proposal or that proposal or get that done. You think you cram it all in the last half an hour of the day and you go, that was all right. We made it in the end. Yeah, it'd be less stressful if I just got on with it in the morning and then didn't get distracted.
I feel that.
I don't think my brain would work properly if I forced it.
I often get days like that. Like, I really appreciate a slow morning and just sort of being eased into the day. I'm more of a night person than a morning. And I feel a little bit sharper after that, like, hour of brain fog kind of, like, burns off. But so I feel like morning is still a more productive, like, part of my day. But that first hour, forget it. It just feels forced. It feels too forced.
Yeah, so. I'm a work from bed person for the first 2 hours of the day. So I get up about 6:30, 7:30 most mornings, get my phone out, check LinkedIn, check social medias, maybe write a blog post on my phone or talk to it, do a bit of AI processing. Then I get up, have some breakfast, and about 10 o'clock I'll start actually booking meetings and doing stuff. So yeah, it's kind of my start. And then in the evening I'll get off my desk here and I'll sit in the lounge maybe for an hour, just on the phone, just checking a few things, social media. So yeah, I kind of try and occupy different spaces and do different tasks that make me happy. There's no point sitting in a chair and feeling uncomfortable if you might as well sit on the sofa and do some of this stuff.
Because people work through you. I 100% agree. I have a friend that gets up and writes for 4 hours every single day, and then she fucks off in the afternoon. She just is like, never. She just sucks in the afternoon. She can't get anything done. And even if she forced it, it takes her, you know, double the length of time. So she's like, what's the point? So yeah, she just commits to that. Like, we should just do whatever works for you.
I'll let you into a secret. I have that attitude to the whole of December. As soon as it gets dark in the evenings, as soon as I detect a bit of holiday mode kicking in, I'm kind of like, I'm just on the run down here for Christmas Eve. I'm just, yeah, just.
Same.
Having it.
I actually took the last 3 weeks of the year off last year, December. It's a wasteland. And my husband's seasonal, he's a landscaper. So he's off doing nothing. And I'm like, well, I want to do nothing, you know? So it's just, and then, yeah, it feels like it's 10 o'clock at 6 because it's pitch black. And I lack the motivation.
A couple of years ago, my wife actually joined me in the business. So she gave up a paid employment by a company and joined me. So because one of the challenges of the app was I had the flexibility and freedom to work when I want and also work when I don't want to. That's the other trouble with entrepreneurship. You work when you want, but also work when you don't want.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of times when I just said, oh, I should go away this weekend or go away on the Friday or just do a midweek. Of course, she was then restricted by the paid employment.
Yeah.
So somehow I just thought, let's make this work. And it's not been easy. It's trying to generate the whole entire household income from one stream. But we can now, if we want to go away for the weekend, we want to stop working at 5 o'clock, just go do something.
So we're in the same camp. We are both own our own businesses as well. So I feel the freedom and the flexibility and the joy of it. And then also the pressure of just but
it is.
Yeah, it's nice. It's mostly nice. Paying for our insurance is crushing my spirit at the moment, but it's fine. It's just one of the byproducts of doing it your own way.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing to be said where if you're not careful, you're both on different pages and different speeds. As you said, you're both entrepreneurs, you both have your own businesses, you can both make decisions when you want to.
Mm-hmm.
When there was a disconnect, it became frustrating for both of us.
I
want to do something and we can't. Marie would look at me and say, oh, it's all right for you, being able to do what you want. I've got to go. It's made a huge change to our relationship over the last 3 or 4 years now. It's immensely more powerful. I think that adds to the entrepreneurial journey because it really does become your lifestyle, not just your business.
Totally. And I think we've both grown at sort of the same rate, but at different times because there's so many limiting beliefs you have to overcome too as an entrepreneur and things like that. So I sort of think that there would have been a disconnect of one of us sort of being stuck in this older kind of time frame and then the other one moving forward. And so it's been incredible, honestly. So
are you building a brand or are you just building a single person business type thing? Are you trying to build it to sell or are you just building it to live?
So we are just building it to live, both of them. He's never wanted to get too big where he couldn't be there and work on his own jobs. They're his designs and he wants to see them through to the end. And there's also so much equipment involved in running each crew. And we don't really want to have that much overhead and equipment. So he very much got to a point, he's in his 8th year and I'm in my 7th. And he just was like, this is it. I will only take on this many jobs per year, and that's it. I don't want to grow. And then he potentially would sell to his employee that he's had for the majority of the time, something for a later discussion. We're in our early 40s. But I have two best friends that I've hosted we've hosted 22 times together. One's the chef, one's the photographer. And if either one of them wanted to carry it on whenever I decide I no longer want to do it, they would be able to do it. Otherwise, I would just close it. It's my brand. It's my baby. Yeah.
I'm with you. I mean, my IT companies, I had 30-odd staff, £3 million UK pound turnover, stress and wage bills and taxes and all this kind of stuff, and premises. When I started doing this freelancing and I took on a social media person. I took on a graphic designer to do some of the assets. And suddenly I thought, hang on a minute, I'm taking on over it. I don't want to be responsible for people anymore.
Yeah. I didn't either.
I rejected it.
I didn't have as big of a, I only had 10 people probably towards the end that reported to me. It was fine. It's not something I want to do all the time.
No.
I like hiring contractors, like you said. I really love hiring a professional that I know can do a better job than what I could. And I would also waste so much time on getting a result that I wasn't jazzed about. And then just letting them go, offloading it from my plate, just hiring somebody I trust and love. And contractors like that. That's usually what I do.
I suppose I'm taking advantage of AI tools now. I treat them as my assistants. So you got writing assistants and copywriters and letter writers and marketing copy, and even you can generate a good enough graphic with a bit of bit of prompting and stuff. So I feel I've got a team around me. They're just not real. They're just AI.
Yeah, no, I agree. especially in the last like couple of years, it's really made it easier.
It's only getting better. You know, the tools that are coming out all the time now is whatever ChatGPT and OpenAI are looking at, these agents and things, you can start handling all your inquiries. I've got some other automation stuff I work on with another platform. You just drop something in it. Like this podcast episode, I'm just going to drop it into a workflow and it will spit out all the stuff I need at the end of it without any real human interaction. So, yeah. So I feel like I've got friends to help. It's just digital friends. Yeah. So what was the biggest lesson you learned stepping out into the wind, into the cold, into the entrepreneurial life? What did you look back on and think, didn't know that?
I think that if you're not making the same mistakes, you're doing it right. I think there's so much trial and error, and you learn the most when it doesn't work out the way you wanted. You can either pivot like, ugh, I don't want to do this at all, it didn't work out at all, or you just have more information to move forward and tweak things. Life is all about learning and moving forward. And I think that a lot of people get so in their head and that they don't even try. And the difference between the people that do and don't is just they tried and they kept going. That's it.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, to use the F word again, you have to fuck up quickly and move on quickly and know what doesn't work. And yeah, I think I've made so many mistakes over the last couple of years, but also so many recoveries as well.
Yeah. And that gives you more confidence. It builds resiliency and confidence just moving on from that. I really agree with you of moving on quickly. You can't just dwell in your own shit. Like, it just learn the lesson and move on.
Yeah. I think you're allowed to cry for a bit and get upset with yourself and shout at the mirror and go, maybe not sleep for a couple of nights. And then you just go, done that.
Yeah. Right, yeah, next. Don't let it drag you down for too long. I agree.
Just move on quickly. So it's the people you work with. So the women that come to your retreats or the retreats of the people you work with, they're looking for authenticity, empowerment. What does that look like really? Yeah, because people listen to this podcast. We're trying to get into the heads of the people listening. So if you're listening to this, we're talking to you right now. So what's the retreat really going to do other than the buzzwords?
Yeah, I think that anytime you are just feeling called and like pulled and something just keeps coming up on your radar, you're meant to do that thing. You're meant to give it a shot. And I would say that everybody that is coming is feeling a little bit in a transitional period of time, a little bit stuck or a little bit like, what's my next move? Is this really what I want? They're all alike in that of wanting just a little bit more. Sometimes not having any clue what that looks like. So getting stuck and, moving forward. But I will say when I started Wandering Roots from scratch, there was a period of time where I knew I wanted to make a change, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I just started doing things that interested me and kind of scared the hell out of me. So usually your mind, to keep you safe, says, no, you can't do that. That's scary. Or no, how would you ever learn how to do that? And everybody's a beginner. For anything, one time. That's how you get better at things. You keep doing it over and over. So the more you can just give it a shot and then give yourself permission to just quit it if you don't like it, life isn't that serious. You don't have to take yourself that seriously. And also don't get caught up in not knowing what you want yet. Just keep trying things.
I like that because I used to say when I was starting this business, I was wandering around the woods with no compass and no sat-nav, just figuring out, I'll turn left, I'll turn right. Oh, no, I don't like this. Go back, try again, and go that way. And it's the joy of being lost with purpose, if you like.
Yeah.
Trying to find the exit.
Well, that's such a good way to describe it. I feel that to my core. That's exactly what it felt like. No direction, but some purpose. Just like trying to figure it out. I mean, I also I thought that I would just plan people's retreats and teach yoga at a studio or plan people's vacations. I didn't even think about a retreat initially. I was just putting a few feelers out there, trying things and then being I don't know if I want to do that, So yeah, it really evolved into something I didn't even consider in the beginning.
It's a question then. So these, your retreats are for women, i.e. not for men, is an easy way of describing it. How do they empower women being in a female-only space with feminine energy, if you like, or that connection. How does that differ from mixed environments or the traditional home networks they have?
So I did do a couples retreat one time, and we had mixed couples. We had, you know, gay couples, lesbians, but we had men for the first time. It just, people weren't as open and didn't connect as quickly. I don't know if it was because their partner was there. Sometimes it's actually, I feel like most of my guests would say this. It's usually easier to tell a stranger something like some secret or something vulnerable because they don't know anything about you. They don't have, everybody that you spend time with sees you in a certain container and box because that's how they see themselves. And so to not have those like boxes or these like just these like relationships that kind of have these just repeated patterns, it's a lot easier to just be open, be vulnerable, start over, not be bogged down by how you're supposed to show up. That's been my experience. I actually have several clients that host mixed retreats, and they love it. And they do like large groups. I don't love a large group. I don't really like the sound of it. I don't know. I'm very sensitive to it. So mine are usually 10 to 12. But like, again, you can do anything in a retreat. It's just a container for whatever you want to share.
So the key element, I think what you're saying there is it's in order to let go of these beliefs, let go of what you're trying to let go of, or find something you're exploring, you've almost got to do it metaphorically naked, without any baggage, without anything with you. You're turning up. So it could be mixed, but as long as you're not mixed with anybody you know. So you're turning up with a group of strangers of it.
100%. I think my girlfriends that host the ones that are mixed, it's just a large group of just mostly single people or people that traveled solo. A lot of people, and this was a lot in the beginning, we got a lot of people that only wanted to come with a friend. And it's like, you meet more people too if you don't come with a friend, because that you don't have the security blanket that you're like attached to. You got to put yourself out there more, which means you'll also try other things, not just getting to know strangers, but you'll try other things. So I think coming by yourself is the best way to go.
Yeah. And if you have social anxiety, you're introvert, you're not good at making friends. You're right. But there's bound to be somebody else in the group who is exactly the same.
Yes.
And then you'll pair up of two people who are going, 100%. I don't want to talk to anyone either. We'll be friends and talk to each other. And so you connect, don't you?
You'll connect over that. You'll connect over your social anxiety. We have that happen all the time. Totally.
Did you see a rise as a result of COVID of more social anxiety? People having this, you go from FOMO to CBA, you can't be asked to go back out again. You know,
Yeah, I will say that in the beginning, people were just a little bit nervous, especially to travel international. And honestly, in the very beginning, it was like really hard to keep track of, do I have to have a negative test to come home? And like those regulations kept changing. I actually, because of my lab background, found these telehealth tests that were accepted by PSA. And so we were able to, as long as we had Wi-Fi tests at our venue, we didn't have to like ship everybody to like a health center or anything like that. So, and then I really managed travel insurance and other things like that, just in case, like, you know, worst came to worst. That never happened. Thankfully, nobody tested positive. But after all of that, after maybe like 6 months of sort of that being the reality, it almost helped us. People were so like starved for human connection, and travel pushes you anyways. I think it really expands your mind and just your flexibility and how seriously you take yourself. And I think people were really missing that. They were missing being able to experience new things and being able to go on an adventure.
Yeah, I can relate to that. In my 30s and 40s, I traveled extensively. Once I used to work for a bank, and they had global offices, and I spent a lot of time in LA and San Diego, Miami, New York, and of course the Far East, Hong Kong. Places like this, all these glamorous locations around the world, with a small team of IT implementation teams. So we were working hard, playing hard. Yeah, we finished work at 5, and we'd party until 5, and then we'd have an hour of sleep, and we'd go back, we'd do this. And, you know, we were in Singapore and Hong Kong for, I think, between them, about 4 weeks between them. And I got home and I was just like, oh, I've done it. I've maxed out the country. I've done it. Well, maxed out the clubs anyway. So I think you do need to go and explore a bit of the world. It's certainly given me a different outlook, meeting people. Another experience I had was I was a member of a club and it had a network of clubs all around the world again. And we were doing home hosting. We were just racking up in Iceland and staying in someone's house for a week, in their hot tub or in their jacuzzi and their sauna in the back garden. In Finland, we were walking around in the snow, drinking vodka and going into the sauna. And you just live the life of a local for a week or so.
Yes.
An experience you just can't buy. Yeah, it's like Airbnb where the guest stays with you. Sort of the way you stay with the host.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. It's fascinating to see how other parts of the world live. It's so different and it's awesome.
Not the hotel version or the backpacker version. It's just kind of like the everyday. They go off to work, you go and do something and they lend you their car and you just go and do something. It's like, people are incredibly generous when you get that trust built.
And they're usually, we always hire a driver or a guide that's local so that they can give you sort of the history or fun facts and sort of take you off the beaten path. But it's more people want to talk to them about like their family and, you know, where they grew up and what school's like there. And those types of questions, like the day to day, how different it is. And that's always, we keep in touch with almost all of our drivers because we spend so much time with them and they're usually just so much fun. So it's fun.
Yeah. In that moment, you're talking about drives are so much fun. We were out in, I think it was Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and we got an Uber. And we're going for half an hour or something, at least half an hour in an Uber. And one of the friends I was with said, excuse me, driver, can I pair my phone with your stereo? And then we can play our own music in the car. He went, yeah, sure. Here's the pairing code. So suddenly we've got this playlist in the back of the car. We'll see how the fact it's over. I think we probably drank too much. That helped. But yeah, it was one of those moments where we now have Uber karaoke. Uber will let us put on the connect to this their hi-fi system.
Well, I love a good travel story. A lot of... The memories, the experience.
Yeah. They're so enriching. I think in a way that helped the entrepreneurial mindset. Because you get so used to these random situations that are outside your comfort zone that mostly turn out well.
Yeah.
Or with a really crazy story that you kind of can't tell anybody, but you're not dead. Survived it.
Yeah. I think, too, when we're in a group, it's sort of that, like, they had to be there for it to be funny. And that sort of connects me as well. You all have that funny story together. And so, the human connection.
What goes on tour stays on tour, sort of mentality. It's like, was it that film, The Hangover? You know, you have to be there to experience it. Yeah. So, without giving anything too drastic away, what's the biggest fuck up you've ever had that turned out okay in the end?
Yeah. So I actually, this did not happen on a retreat, thankfully, but we got stuck in a tropical storm, like they got 11 inches of rain in Costa Rica. It was like the worst rainstorm they had had in like 13 years or something. And we were supposed to move just like 20 minutes location wise. A lot of times me and my two girlfriends will go scout a location before. And it started raining and like it always does. So you just wait an hour or two and then you go. And we were up in the mountains and we just had to drive down to the beach basically. And it just never stopped. And it was like rain from like where it looks like a wall. It just was raining so hard. But we're like, well, we gotta go. We have four wheel drive. We'll give it our best shot. And we got stuck in a mudslide and the car started coming back down the hill and it got stuck. The back tire on the passenger side got stuck in a concrete culvert, thankfully. And so we walked back down the hill. I mean, we're just soaking wet. And they thankfully had an empty room and we just stayed the night there. And in the morning, the entire road had washed out. So if we had made it up the first hill, we would have just been on a river. We would have never seen it. It was so dark out there. I was like, this I just was like, you know, I think I'm going to hire a driver from now on, like to navigate just this shit, because I also can't navigate and talk. So sometimes we'll be in a car for a half an hour, and I'd rather talk with the guests, whereas I'm like, you cannot talk to me while I'm driving, because I can only, I'm just very, can't multitask. But that's helped so much, especially with parking. You know, sometimes you just can't find a spot, and then it's on them. We just get to get out, and they'll figure it out. So,
Drop you off, they go and park it, and pick you up later. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah. And I also had, it was my birthday that day, and I had also had quite a few drinks, and we're usually like have someone designated to drive us, and then the other two will fuck off a bit. But I also had the epiphany in the morning of like, I'm not going to drink on a retreat ever. I'm responsible for these people's safety, and I really wanted to be sober when the car was sliding back down the hill. I just was like, none of this is fun for me. So yeah, those were I guess the biggest, most terrifying travel story I have.
Yeah, I gave up drinking 3 years ago. I spent too much of my life with alcohol controlling it. And I think part of my journey was to say, hang on a minute, I want to do this raw.
Yeah.
Real me, not induced or comatose me, just to take responsibility for everything I do and say. Yeah, it just got to that point in my life where I thought, I've drank too much. Now's the time to stop.
Yeah, I've never been one that really has drank to excess ever a lot. Like, in large periods of time, but I'm now 40, and just having one cocktail just almost ruins me for the next day. Like, I just sleep terribly, and then I'm just lethargic and kind of just don't feel well the next day. And so I rarely have a drink. Another friend of mine that's also a yoga teacher, we always talk about like radical sobriety is when you start to like truly like love yourself, and you're okay with all of your thoughts, and you're okay with not dimming down any of your joy or making any of the pain, you know, easier. It's just like being a real human being about all of your experiences and experiencing them fully. So yeah, that's kind of been my journey in the last couple of years.
Yeah, the radical surprise, I think the side of that to me that I've recognized is that actually, I don't want to be here. I want to go home. I've had enough. You know, it's nice, and I don't feel guilty about it. Or someone invites me, and I go, to be honest, I don't want to. It's okay. I don't want to. Really, yeah. I don't want to.
I appreciate the invite, but no, good for you.
I don't want to come along and watch everybody else get drunk, and then me go,
no,
this is boring. So yeah, it's not that I want to exclude myself from these occasions. I just think when you see it sober, you think, what was I ever doing here? I was the one that was. At the end of the night, I remember being in Melbourne, Australia, speaking at a conference, and I was with a friend of mine, and we were well known for burning whatever oil we could find at whatever time of night. And the bar shut, and we found another bar, and then we said, "Oh look, we want another drink." So we found a gas station that sold beer, and we went and bought beer in this gas station. We sat on a brick wall and just drank beer at like 4 o'clock in the morning. I looked at myself and thought, "What am I doing? What am I doing?"
Yeah.
I think I was in Tallinn in Estonia, and we managed to find a fast food joint that did kebabs at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they served beer or something. We were in this kebab shop drinking beer. It's like, get out of the next morning, think, why do I do that? Why do I do that? Because you could. It was fun at the time.
It was there, right? And it's sort of, once you get into it, you're like, well, why would we stop now? It's sort of that like energy.
But I'm enjoying life more now that I've now got control over it, rather than on some sort of autopilot predestined. How am I going to feel in the morning? Terrible. Now I know I'm going to wake up in the morning feeling great again.
Yeah. Nice.
So, Anna, how do people get hold of you? You do all these retreats. So obviously you've got your own business that hosts retreats. Then you also an organizer for other people.
Yeah.
So if you're a budding retreat organizer, how do they get hold of you? Or if you want to just check in and experience one of yours.
Yeah, moneymakingretreats.com. If you want to just book a quick 30-minute consult, it's free. You'll know immediately if we're a good match or not, or if you don't like me. And then retreatsthatdontsuck.com if you want to go on one of our retreats. But we only have one spot left for you to retreat with us this year. We only have one spot left to Iceland. Italy's sold out. And yeah, but we'd love to have you. One more.
Iceland's awesome. I remember... I was in Iceland 1998, 99, I think it was about then. And we stayed in this hostel in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know if anyone's listening, I don't know if you know, but Iceland has this culture of sagas. And they have all these people from ancient years. And what they used to do was get together and tell each other stories, which are sagas. It's like a bit like our Robin Hood or whatever sort of stories. Most of these places had a natural hot spring.
Yeah.
Where people could go and dive into. We were in this hostel in the middle of nowhere. And we had loads of whiskey, loads of vodka. We just had bottles everywhere. About, I don't know, about 30 or 40 of us. And so I said, there's a hot spring or hot tub outside. So we all piled in it, about 10 of us, all sitting there around the edge with our feet into the middle, passing the beer around. And then the security guard came flying out and sort of screaming at us. It was a national monument. This was the hot spring associated with one of the leading saga aficionados, a guy called Snorri. This is Snorri's hot spring. We didn't speak Icelandic much. We had a couple of Icelandic friends with us, and it was kind of like we all kind of left sheepish and sort of staggered back in there. But we were all stark naked in this hot spring, an ancient monument. But yeah, hey, what the heck? They left it unguarded.
Gosh, what a story.
So Iceland's a beautiful country.
It was beautiful, and also the middle of nowhere kind of describes the majority of it.
Yeah. I mean, the geysers, the Blue Lagoon. Yeah. Yeah. Sort of places. We even did, they took us to a glacier, and then they got the big donuts, and we were sliding down the glaciers on the donuts. And yeah, it was a lot of fun for a week, and we skidooed across the glaciers. And I remember they said to us, make sure you keep in single file, because if you're not careful, you could go down a crevasse or something
on
the snow. And of course, every time the guide faced the front again, we all spread out trying to overtake each other. He turned around and we go, oh, we're back in the middle again. Oh, we're back on the outside. And and then someone told us a story. Said, yeah, people actually do fall down crevasses where the snow is, you can't see the gaps. Yeah, we felt lucky to survive that. That would have been a serious error, that one.
Yeah, lucky.
And it's been absolutely fantastic having a chat with you.
Fun.
And I think we used the F word at least 4 or 5 times in there, which is not bad for one of my episodes. So yeah, no, I really enjoyed you. A lot of fun. And I will definitely look you up, and I've got to do a retreat sometime, but obviously
you
not this
should.
Year.
It would be great. Maybe next year. You have great energy to host something like that. So, yeah.
Well, I'll make sure I put all of your links into the show notes. And if anyone wants to get in contact with you, do what I did. Just track you down online and say, do you want to be a guest on my show? And you said, hey, why not? Let's do it.
So thank you for having me. It's really been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Thank you. As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.